This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall. Algeria is facing its biggest demonstrations in years, with tens of thousands of people taking to the streets this weekend to protest another re-election bid by ailing 82-year-old President Abdelaziz Bouteflika. Bouteflika suffered a stroke in 2013 and has not been widely seen since. In Algiers, the capital, young and old are calling for a free and democratic Algeria. The protests have been stoked by anger over high unemployment rates and charges of widespread government corruption. The failed U.S.-North Korean summit this week is the focus of a lot of attention here in the United States. Some of the most critical words are aimed at President Trump. Case in point, the parents of an American college student who died after being released from North Korean captivity. They have pointedly rejected the president's praise of Kim Jong-un and his willingness to accept the dictator's assurances that he was unaware of Otto Wambier's ordeal in real time. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani has a report.
Fred and Cindy Wambier are rebuking President Trump after he said yesterday he didn't think Kim Jong-un was aware of their son Otto's alleged mistreatment.
He tells me that he didn't know about it, and I will take him at his word.
Wambier said they stayed silent while the president was meeting with Kim in Vietnam, but now must speak out. In a written statement, they say Kim and his evil regime are responsible for Otto's death, and no excuses or lavish praise can change that. Otto Wambier died 2 years ago after being returned to the U.S. in a vegetative state. Sagar Magani, Washington.
The U.S. and South Korea are expected to announce soon they will scale back their annual large-scale joint military exercises. Unnamed U.S. defense officials say the move could be seen as a good-faith gesture to keep nuclear talks with North Korea alive following the failed Hanoi summit. This is VOA News. The U.S. ambassador to Great Britain has attacked what he describes as a smear campaign against American agriculture by what he says are protectionist interests. AP correspondent Zaria Shackley has a report.
Woody Johnson says in an article published in the Daily Telegraph that U.S. food products are safe and that scare stories about chlorine-washed chicken and hormone-pumped beef are being used to mislead the public. The comments come as Britain prepares to negotiate its own trade deals with the U.S. and other countries after Brexit. Johnson says American producers use scientific and technological tools to feed a growing global population, in contrast to the European Union's Museum of Agriculture. Zara Shackley, London.
The Islamic State's self-declared caliphate in Syria may soon be an empty phrase. Some 15,000 U.S.-backed fighters, along with coalition warplanes and artillery, are engaged in what is termed a final assault to seize a small ISIS enclave in the village of Baghouz. Combat is said to be heavy, but U.S. coalition sources are reported they are confident that battle will not last much longer. Meanwhile, a United Nations aid official says nearly 12 million people in Syria are on the knife edge of survival. Here's VOA's Lisa Schlein in Geneva.
The United Nations has not yet come up with a dollar amount for its humanitarian plan for Syria, but based on last year's $3.36 billion appeal, the cost of caring for millions of destitute civilians in 2019 will not be cheap. The Syrian government, with the aid of its Russian allies, has made large military and territorial gains. Despite this, the United Nations says neither the war nor the humanitarian crisis affecting the civilian population is over. The UN reports an estimated 6.2 million Syrians are internally displaced. It says more than 80% of the population lives below the poverty line, suffering from chronic levels of deprivation.
That was VOA's Lisa Schlein in Geneva. The United States has imposed sanctions against a number of Venezuelan officials aligned with embattled President Nicolas Maduro. The special U.S. representative for Venezuela is Elliot Abrams.
Maduro supporters that abuse or violate human rights, steal from the Venezuelan people, or undermine Venezuela's democracy are not welcome in the United States.
The new measures are part of an ongoing U.S. effort to pressure Maduro to step down. U.S. Taliban peace talks were scheduled to resume today in Qatar after a two-day break. The immediate goal is fleshing out details of a draft agreement that both sides hope will lead to a settlement to the conflict through an all-Afghan peace process. Gene Randall, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impuga.
Les Algériens se sont sentis réellement à la fois humiliés et infantilisés.
Sorbonne University North Africa expert Khadija Mohsen-Finan says Algerians feel both humiliated and infantilized by being expected to vote for Bouteflika once again.
Demonstrations in Algeria to protest another re-election bid by ailing President Abdelaziz Bouteflika.
We are going to receive official, another official communication as to why, for example, Rwandese nationals are not being allowed to come to Uganda and why goods, vehicles are not being allowed into Rwanda.
Uganda's government summons the Rwandan ambassador to explain why Rwandan citizens are being prevented from entering Uganda.
It is common knowledge that the rural population don't have access to clean water. I think it's high time we start recycling our water.
And a survey shows millions of households in Nigeria do not have access to clean water sources. Those stories and more coming up right here on Nightline Africa. Algeria is facing its biggest demonstrations in years, with tens of thousands of people taking the streets to protest another re-election bid by ailing President Abdelaziz Bouteflika. For the moment, President Bouteflika is expected to formally present his candidacy by Sunday's deadline. For VOA, Lisa Brandt reports from Paris on what's behind the demonstrations.
The protests have been largely peaceful, but on Friday, there were reports of violence that left at least one person dead. The state-run Algerian press service reported 56 police officers and seven citizens were wounded in the capital, Algiers, and several dozen protesters were arrested. Other media described witness accounts of police hitting demonstrators with batons and lobbing tear gas at them. The anti-government protests that erupted in several cities and towns after Friday prayers are the biggest in years. Protesters oppose President Abdelaziz Bouteflika running for a fifth term in office. But there is also anger at the country's high joblessness and alleged government corruption. Bouteflika turned 82 on Saturday and is reportedly undergoing medical tests in Geneva. Rarely seen in public since suffering a stroke in 2013, he is paralyzed and in a wheelchair.
Les Algériens se sont sentis réellement à la fois humiliés et infantilisés.
Sorbonne University North Africa expert Khadija Mohsen-Finan says Algerians feel both humiliated and infantilized by being expected to vote for Bouteflika once again, regardless of the true state of his health. The political structure is aging, she says, noting the president has been part of Algeria's power system since its independence from France in 1962. Since taking office in 1999, President Bouteflika is credited for restoring peace in Algeria following a brutal civil war that killed upwards of 100,000 people. The so-called Arab Spring that began in neighboring Tunisia in 2011 and swept across the region left little mark on Algeria. Oil dollars helped the government maintain stability, and few Algerians wanted to revisit their violent past. This past week, Algeria's prime minister recalled the chaos that followed the Arab Spring uprising in Syria. But oil prices have plummeted since 2011, and Algeria's economy is struggling. Today, nearly one-third of Algerians under 30 are jobless, and the country's largely young population has little memory of the civil war.
Ils peuvent dire, très bien, ce n'est pas Bouteflika pour des raisons de santé.
Analyst Mohsen Finan, who co-authored a new book on dissent in North Africa, says the country's ruling power is divided on the way forward, while demonstrations driven by social media are unified in opposing Bouteflika's re-election bid. She says Algeria's regime might still present an alternative candidate to the president. The big question is whether the public will accept it. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
In Sudan, the president Omar al-Bashir has stepped down from his position as chairman of the ruling party. The National Congress Party, NCP, that enjoys a sweeping majority in parliament, made the announcement late Thursday. Following weeks of protests against Bashir's rule, the president transferred his party leadership role to NCP Deputy Chairman Ahmed Haroun until the party's next general convention. An NCP party statement said a new president will be chosen at the next general convention. A date for the convention, however, has not been set. The party's chief becomes its candidate for the presidential elections, according to the party's charter. Uganda's government has summoned the Rwandan ambassador to explain why Rwandan citizens are being prevented from entering Uganda. A Ugandan government spokesman also says hundreds of cargo vehicles from Uganda have been prevented from entering Rwanda and are stuck at the border crossings. From Kampala, a reporter Mugume Davis Rwakarinji reports.
The standoff started yesterday after Rwanda's tax body, the Rwanda Revenue Authority, said in a letter the Ugandan counterparts that heavy trucks will be restricted to specific entry points. But Ugandan government spokesperson Ofwono Pondo told journalists today that only 10 cargo vehicles have been allowed entry into Rwanda since yesterday. Opondo also said that while Ugandans and other nationalities were allowed to cross into Rwanda, the Rwandan government had advised its citizens not to cross into Uganda. The Rwandan government crossed the Katuna border crossing earlier this week, citing major road repairs as the crossing is upgraded. The crossing at Chisoro district has also been closed. But thus far, the Kigali government has not given a public statement as why it was shut. Opondo says the standoff is having a wide impact.
Hundreds of school children from Rwanda cross to Uganda every day and go back every evening. They're also not allowed to come. What I'm communicating to you, apart from the temporary closure as a result of construction, we haven't received any other official communication as to why, for example, Rwandese nationals are not being allowed to come to Uganda and why goods, vehicles are not being allowed into Rwanda.
Uganda and Rwanda share socio-economic ties. Citizens from each side live in the other country, and Uganda acts as a transit route for most goods entering Rwanda. But at times, the two allies have confronted each other and nearly waged a full-scale war when their armies clashed in the neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo in 2000. Rwanda has accused Uganda of arrests and mistreatment of its citizens, a claim that Opondo vehemently denies.
We have no issues as a country, even as people to people. We have no issues with our Rwandese brothers and sisters. They have lived with us here, as you know.
Opondo insists the two countries must live together in the spirit of East African community. According to EAC laws, citizens from one country have unlimited freedom of movement to the others. He says his government is using all diplomatic means to end the row.
We have also asked our ambassador to Rwanda, Honorable Olive Woneka, to go to the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Rwanda in Kigali, because she's there, to seek explanation. We hope that these two interactions, the one between the Rwanda's ambassador and our Minister of Foreign Affairs, and our ambassador in Kigali and the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Rwanda, should be able to resolve these issues pretty quickly.
Amid tensions last year, Uganda President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni and Rwanda President Paul Kagame held a joint news conference in Kampala in which they said the two countries remained allies. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
The Zimbabwe government last week arrested one of the country's leading journalists in a move that is being widely condemned by other journalists. Reporter Ade Gondo gives us more on that story.
Police arrested Edmund Kudzai, a former editor with state-owned Sunday Mail, after they stopped his car at a roadblock and found a camouflage umbrella. Kudzai was charged with illegal possession of military wear. Camouflage clothing is bad. Local journalists questioned the basis of the arrest. Fortune Dlamini is one of them.
So the soldiers, they should tell us if they've got a warehouse full of camouflage umbrella. It's like accusing someone saying you stole my goats when they don't have a pen of goats. Even soldiers, we've never seen them carrying a camouflage umbrella. If it is under the law of, the new law of not possessing any camouflage clothing or whatever, we've never seen in Zimbabwe even soldiers carrying a camouflage umbrella. So arresting him on flimsy charges, it is obviously because he's been targeted because of what he's been, of his opinions about the current rate. We hope that this is not an attack on journalists, because it will definitely impinge on our freedom of expression and our freedom of the media. Journalists have got a right to speak out.
The arrest comes in the wake of the Zimbabwe National Army announcing that it would conduct snap searches on residential areas looking for military equipment it claims was stolen during January's mass protests. The protests turned violent, with property damage and several people killed and injured. Cherry Charamba, the Zimbabwean police spokesperson, said some of the violence was committed by people wearing stolen military apparel and pretending to be members of the security forces. Kudzai is the founder of Kukurigo Updates, a WhatsApp news service that disseminates news about Zimbabwean politics. Some journalists say he was arrested because his work ruffled official feathers. He has been granted bail and is set to return to court on March the 8th. Kudzai's lawyer, Obed Shawa, is a member of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights.
The problem that we have is that the military has literally taken over all the police duty. You are driving on the roads. Whenever you see a police roadblock, there are soldiers. And the soldiers are the ones who are at the forefront. Like in this case, it is a soldier who conducted a search upon my client.
Under the Constitution, a suspect is supposed to be advised of the reason of the arrest. Shawa says this did not happen in Kudzai's case. The Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights says that the problem with sending soldiers to carry out policing duties is that soldiers usually do not know police procedures. Over 600 people have been arrested in the wake of the recent protests. Lawyers and activists say many arrests were on flimsy ground, such as having unopened groceries in the pantry, which arresting officers said was evidence of participation in looting. Journalist and founder of the Center for Innovation and Technology site, Zenzele Ndebele, thinks these arrests show Zimbabwe is now under martial law.
But it shows as well that our government and this government is going to do whatever it takes to actually undermine people's rights by making sure that they arrest them for anything. But I'm certain that the arrest of Kudzai was not necessarily about the umbrella, but about his work. So they just found an excuse to actually arrest him for what he does. And that is telling this Zimbabwean story as a journalist.
Spokesperson Cherry Charamba maintains that individuals found in possession of military or police uniform are in breach of the law. Reporting for VOA, this is Ade Gondo.
The World Health Organization says the deadly Ebola virus is likely to spread in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo because of deteriorating security in conflict-ridden North Kivu and Ituri provinces. The latest WHO figures put the number of Ebola cases at 885, including 555 deaths. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
International efforts to stop the spread of the deadly Ebola virus in eastern DR Congo has hit a serious roadblock. The charity, Doctors Without Borders, has suspended its life-saving operations. The action follows attacks on two of its Ebola treatment centers this week. The first on February 24th in Katwa, followed by an attack 3 days later in Butembo. The World Health Organization calls the attacks deplorable and says there is a great risk of the spread of the disease. During the attack on the facility in Butembo, 4 Ebola patients fled for their lives. WHO spokesman Christian Lindemeyer says 3 of the patients have since returned, while 1 is still missing.
If you want so positive notice that all of these 4 patients were convalescent, that means they were already getting better. Hence, they had a lower viral load, which makes it way less likely for further infections. But yes, it is highly important to find those people or that last patient and then, of course, immediately start the contact tracing and monitor the contacts these patients might have been in touch with.
Lindemeyer says the WHO remains committed to staying in the DRC until the job is done. However, he notes that an Ebola outbreak as complex as this one can only be managed collectively and by having all the partners on the ground. He adds it is normal to expect organizations to do whatever is necessary to protect their staffs. The Ebola outbreak in North Kivu and Ituri provinces is the second largest in history after the 2014 epidemic in West Africa that killed more than 11,000 people. Prior to the recent incidents, progress was being made in containing the spread of the Ebola virus in the DRC. The WHO reports the disease is now largely under control in the former hotspots of Mangina, Beni, and Komanda. It says more than 250 people have been cured and 80,000 protected through vaccination. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Great Lakes region has grappled with political instability and civil war for decades, but has made significant progress in resolving conflicts and promoting integration, according to a top United Nations diplomat. Said Jeanette, the UN Special Envoy for the Great Lakes region, says the region has recently witnessed important developments on the political front, including the first peaceful transfer of power in the Democratic Republic of Congo. From Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports for VOA.
Speaking to reporters in Nairobi, Jeanit said mediation efforts toward brokering peace among various armed groups in the region are ongoing.
Integration is going on, cooperation is going on. There are small incidents here and there, but broadly, the region is moving forward, despite some difficulties, that are ups and downs that are there. So there is no significant setback in that sense. I would have loved if there was more determination to take decisive action on negative forces and the related suspicion that goes with it.
Jeanette has since 2014 led international efforts aimed at restoring peace and tranquility in countries of the conflict-prone African region. He says relations among core countries of the region, Burundi, Democratic Republic of Congo, Rwanda and Uganda, have improved, and disarmed former fighters are being repatriated. In 2012, tensions between neighboring countries and military advances in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo by the Rwandan-backed armed fighters known as M23 reignited fears of renewed war.
Since we have been able to promote cooperation between the DRC, Burundi and Rwanda, we have been working on the repatriation of ex-FDLR that have been in camps since 2015 in Eastern DRC, and the M23, which have been in camp in Uganda and Rwanda since 2013, and recently have seen progress.
On the political front, he said the region saw in January the first peaceful transfer of power in the DRC since it gained independence in 1960.
The holding of peaceful election in the DRC was great news for the region. We are positive and we are supportive of the efforts of the DRC as they embark on a new page of development and strengthening democracy and human rights. We do hope that with the new situation, dispensation, after the government is put in place, that the DRC will continue and will strengthen its efforts towards stabilizing the country in general and Eastern DRC in particular.
However, a lot still needs to be done to fully address the underlying root causes of conflict in the region.
As you know, till today, a number of perpetrators of serious crimes are still hosted by the countries of the region while they're wanted by the other countries. So we want to promote the sense of judicial cooperation and extradition between the countries of the region. This is essentially to make the relations between the countries formal, but also informal, so that the process of judicial cooperation is enhanced.
Jinit, an Algerian-born diplomat, is expected to end his term of duty as the United Nations Special Envoy for the region on March 31st. Recently, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres announced the appointment of Huang Xia of China to take over as his new special envoy for the Great Lakes region. Ruben Chama for VOA News, Nairobi.
A survey conducted by Nigeria's Bureau of Statistics and UNICEF shows millions of households in Nigeria do not have access to clean water sources. While the supply of clean water in Nigeria has improved recently, 3 in 10 people still lack access. For VOA, Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Ruth Samuel and her 4 children live here in this uphill settlement on the outskirts of Abuja. But every day they struggle for water, sometimes spending many hours just to scoop water from a ground spring.
Like in the dry season, we used to wake up sometimes 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. Before you get there, man, you cannot see water. You wait.
According to aid agencies, 60 million Nigerians, or 33% of the population, do not have access to clean water. But water and environmental experts like Joseph Ibrahim say that figure may have been underestimated.
I think that figure is a little bit conservative in the sense that as Nigerians, we know that more of our population live in the rural areas. And I think the World Bank statistics tells us that about 51% of our population reside in the rural areas. And it is common knowledge that the rural population don't have access to clean water.
Like many other states in Nigeria's northern region, the Federal District of Abuja lies on the fringes of the Sahel Desert. That means in the dry season when water level is low, sources like this could dry up, leaving thousands here who rely on it daily in dire need. Ruben Habu leads Nigeria's Integrated Water Resources Management Commission. He admits the water problem is serious.
The major problem is funding, yes. And with improved funding, there will be improved infrastructural development, which will guarantee adequate provision of water for the population.
But Joseph Ibrahim says there could be a way out.
I think it's high time we start recycling our water and through channeling our water to waste treatment plants. And from there we separate water as is done in other developed countries of the world.
The government launched an emergency action plan in November to address water problems, but it has yet to make much of an impact. And until the rains return, Ruth Samuel and many others here will have to rely primarily on a water source that is drying out. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
It's the weekend, and you deserve something special. I've got just the thing, Pan-African music, with me, Heather Maxwell. Hello, everybody. You'll hear 2 great interviews. One features my recent visit to the Bizung School of Music and Dance in Tamale, Ghana, with Mohamed Alidu and his music students. And the other comes out of Nairobi. Bill Odidi talks with veteran dancehall artist Red Sun about his new album and his old hits, too.
My name is Red Sun, the baddest Mr. Badder Than, Mr. Shoulderback, Mr. Wine Fimi, me, born and raised a Kenyan.
Song of the Week features the hit song Lepe Mala, currently tearing up the airwaves in Ethiopia. And there's so much more awesome music, people, you just don't want to miss it. So, sweeten up with me on Music Time in Africa. This Sunday and the following Saturday at 15 and 2000 UTC.
This is VOA and you're listening to Nightline Africa, and coming up in the second half of the program, our Saturday music spot from our collection of music from across the continent. And now it's time for our Saturday music spot. Yes, time to relax and enjoy great music from Africa. Kwa jili yangu Mungu amekushusha kitungu endo ratha ya mtoli ama nyama nyama kwenye sambusa kichugu ni mzigo na toroli hadi nguo inataka pasuka msupu mwenye macho ya goroi rangi kama unaoga mafuta. Oh my, oh my, I don't lie, God, you know you changed my life. In your eyes, I don't lie, God, you know you changed my life. Wendo raya dunia baya, sikia my dear, usije nikimbia dunia mile niwe na wewe.
Catch it all.
Push me to the corner, take it slow. I wanna take you down to the floor. Push me to the corner, take it slow. I wanna take you down to the floor. Nazari waku kwa kalali, anjaga namteke ne mumatala. I was born to love you, nteka kumatala. Nazari waku kwa kalali, nteka kumatala. I was born to love you, nteka kumatala. But do you design when we combine? Mori chintu chiba fine. Movire gugo good designing. Nyambale needed but striking. The fire, fire you are lighting. My body blazing. I had a man to buy. And when you coming home, ngulira yo kakondo. Ova ngulire kuka wowo. Baby, kulere yo. Boy, you're the one. Baby boy, you're the one. Nazari waku kwa kalati, anjaga namteke ne mumatala. I was born to love you, nteka kumatala. Nazari waku kwa kalati, nteka kumatala. Push me to the corner, take it slow. I wanna take you down to the floor. Push me to the corner, take it slow. I wanna take you down to the floor. My body you design when we combine. Muri chintu chiba fine. Movire gugo good designing. Nyambale needed but striking. Nazari waku kwa galani. Nazari waku kwa mumatala. I was born to love you. Nteka kumatala.
I don't know. stato turn up, turn up. Maestro Sugar,
pochi limon siamo già.
Like
that was our Saturday Music Spot. I sincerely hope you enjoyed the music. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. From the rest of the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Salim, producer Said Hamdun, we thank you for joining us tonight and join us tomorrow, Sunday. I'm Douglas Mpuga.